KALW.
Certainly, there's a lot of fear, even though I'm very far away from the fire. I certainly check the evacuation map regularly.
At least 350,000 acres have burned in the North Bay.
So what the county has been doing is setting up temporary evacuation points. Now, these are places where people can show up and they will screen them for COVID symptoms.
We'll get an update on the LMU complex fires. Then, normally, people would be preparing for their annual pilgrimage to the Black Rock Desert in Nevada.
Am I ready? I don't know. Because it kind of feels like once you go in, you don't come out for 11 days, 12 days.
Not this year. Like everything else, Burning Man is canceled. Instead, put on your headphones and take a trip to the playa with stories from the latest season of The Intersection. That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Fires are raging around the Bay Area. The smoke is thick in the air. And one of the so-called lightning complexes, the LNU, has caused major damage and evacuations in the North Bay. As of this morning, the fires had scorched more than 350,000 acres in Napa, Sonoma, Solano, Lake, and Yolo counties, landing it at number 2 on the list of California's all-time largest fires in modern history. And a major concern last night, as was with much of the Bay Area, the weather and the possibility of dry lightning further exacerbating the already dire situation. Our colleagues at Northern California Public Media have been covering the fires up north, and I spoke with Adia White, assistant news director there, for an update. First of all, how are you and where are you?
Thanks for asking. I am located in Santa Rosa, so I am doing well. I mean, certainly there's a lot of anxiety since I evacuated last year during the Kincade Fire. And that evacuation, you know, turned out to be to work out fairly well in the sense that my house was fine, my apartment was fine, and I wasn't at any risk. But certainly, there's a lot of fear, even though I'm very far away from the fire. I certainly check the evacuation map regularly and make sure that they won't call evacuations in the middle of the night as they did during the Kincade Fire last year.
Right. And I'm looking at the evacuation map on your website for Northern California Public Media. You know, large areas with a mandatory evacuation, some areas in the yellow with the evacuation warnings. And so one thing people are thinking about in terms of evacuation are how are the evacuation centers working during both a fire and a pandemic that is still going on?
Right. I mean, this was certainly a concern since the pandemic began happening. We've been having these conversations because we knew that if this wasn't under control by the summer, by the start of fall, then this would be really concerning since there are not a lot of options for shelter that can allow people to isolate and stay safe. So what the county has been doing is setting up temporary evacuation points. Now, these are places where people can show up and they will screen them for COVID symptoms. So take their temperature, ask them a number of questions, and then from those points, they will work on providing them other shelter options. So they've been sending people to hotel rooms. They've secured a number of hotel rooms that they can send people. And they're also working with Airbnb and asking for volunteers still to provide free shelter for those evacuating from these fires. Now, right now, Airbnb has booked up all of the emergency housing that they provided, so they're asking for more volunteers throughout the Bay Area. If you're in San Francisco, San Jose, even Sacramento, if you can open up your homes, that will really help the county provide more shelter options for people. We also have one evacuation shelter that is open to larger groups. That's at the fairgrounds. They're trying to keep as few people as possible there, again, because of COVID. But if there aren't more hotel rooms or Airbnb rooms that can open up, then that is where they are sending people.
Mm-hmm. And Adia, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you have been in this before. You have evacuated before. And, you know, the North Bay has been ravaged by fires year after year. How are residents feeling about remaining in the area? I mean, including yourself.
Right. Well, I was not here in 2017, so I will say that I don't fully understand the nightmare of what our community lived through then. But with the Kincaid fire, we also had flooding at the beginning of 2019. So we've lived through a number of different disasters. And I will say that we're still a long way away from recovery just from 2017 in terms of people being able to return to their homes, especially renters who lost homes. Rent has gone up immensely since then, so there's still a lot of housing instability here. And then, as you mentioned, I evacuated during the Kincaid fire, and we're still recovering from that fire as well in terms of lost wages during that time, during the evacuations when they evacuated nearly the entire county. And then that was met shortly by the coronavirus pandemic. So in terms of remaining in the area, I've heard a lot of different thoughts. I'm a part of a Facebook group that provides regular fire updates. And one of the topics was from asking about people who have left the area because of the fires. And those that responded said that it was one of the best decisions they've ever made because they don't have to worry about this year after year. And the stress and anxiety about losing your home, about having to have a plan with smoke. So certainly a lot of residents are looking into that, and that could provide a relief. But then on the other hand, it's a very resilient community that, and a very close community. So there's also a lot of people that say, you know, we've survived 2017 and we'll continue to survive what comes. And especially, I will say, for the Guerneville and the River communities, which are currently under a mandatory evacuation right now, Guerneville has flooded 38 times. And you might remember in early 2019, there was a lot of damage. We had an especially bad flood. Much of the town was underwater. And so this town is rebuilt many times before. So I think that you'll get very different reactions depending on who you talk to. I will say for myself, you know, every fire season, there's kind of a thought of, okay, you know, maybe it's time to leave this year, or maybe next year. I don't know how much worse this is going to get, but then fire season's over and you remember how much you love it here. So that being said, there's certainly a lot of PTSD in the community as well from 2017. The county has been very proactive in providing mental health resources. That's become more of a priority. They have a mental health line that people can call if they're feeling, you know, like they really need to talk through a lot of trauma, a lot of anxiety. And that number is 707-565-2652. That's not a crisis line. That's just a warm line for people that really need to talk through their feelings during this time.
So how have emergency services adapted over time? Again, this has been happening over and over again in the North Bay. Has anything changed in terms of how emergency services are operating?
Yes, I would say a lot has changed. There was a lot of criticism in 2017 because a lot of people didn't get any sort of alert. And of course, no one wants to be running in the middle of the night without any preparation of being able to pack what you need. So the county has made a lot of progress in terms of sending out emergency alerts. We have an emergency manager who's been working actually with the federal government as well to try to improve the technology that we see. So now, you know, you can enroll in NICSL, which is a reverse 911 system. A lot of people are now more aware of the importance of having that. We also use wireless emergency alerts to send out evacuations. And again, these are things that didn't happen back in 2017 in terms of people being able to get these alerts. Certainly, a lot of folks, you know, wouldn't like to get an alert if they're not in an evacuation area because that can cause a lot of stress. That's something that we haven't quite smoothed out yet. But in terms of getting alerts, there's a lot of improvement there. In 2017, the county did little to no translation of emergency information in Spanish. Now, that was almost entirely done by community radio station KBBF. So we're seeing a lot more emergency information translated into Spanish with emergency alerts going out in English and Spanish, as well as translation during press conferences, but it's still limited. So that's there's a lot of room for improvement there. I know there's also a lot of community organizations working to get the county to translate emergency information into indigenous languages as well. So that's something else that community organizations and people would like to see here. But there has been a lot of improvement over the years.
Mm-hmm. And what are you looking at tomorrow and in these next couple of days? What are you working on? Just pretty much these updates.
Right. Pretty much these updates, making sure that, you know, we have live updates as people need, looking at monitoring the evacuations, if any are downgraded again. Especially, I would say today, the big issue is the red flag warning. So monitoring the weather and making sure, you know, that if anything new starts, that we're able to cover it. Another thing that I'll be looking at over the next few days is our water quality. So in Sonoma County, we get a lot of our water from both the Russian River and Lake Sonoma. So right now, residents are being asked to conserve water because should those be contaminated, right now it's not a threat, but should that become contaminated, then that will be an issue as well.
Adia White, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Adia White is the Assistant News Director at Northern California Public Media. You can hear more of my interview with her at KLW.org. That's also where you'll find the latest updates on the fires and evacuations. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Next up, we'll hear an episode from The Intersection, a podcast that looks at changing cities through physical intersections, street corners. But in its most recent season, producer David Boyer did something different. Last year, he went to a remote corner of Nevada for Burning Man. Normally, right about now, around 80,000 people would have been preparing for their annual pilgrimage to the Black Rock Desert. The festival was supposed to start on August 30th, but it's been canceled. So this week, we're re-airing episodes from The Intersection at Burning Man. We begin where the highway meets the desert as David approaches the entrance of Burning Man almost exactly a year ago.
Am I ready? I don't know. Because it kind of feels like once you go in, you don't come out for 11 days, 12 days. Which is a long time to be kind of in a different world. And that's the hope. What would be upsetting is if it didn't feel like a different world. I mean, that's why I've gone all these years.
In case you can't tell, I am a self-identified burner, and I do care about its legacy. So here I am, in a tiny car, packed to the gills with water, food, caffeine, costumes, first aid supplies, and for the first time, I've got tons of audio equipment and a mission to capture the magic and the mundane, the changes and the contradictions of Burning Man in the present tense, before it's over or loses all connection to its origins. It all began in San Francisco in 1986, when a ragtag group of artists, pranksters, and passersby came together on Baker Beach. A wooden effigy of a man, a stick figure really, had been built and was burned as dozens looked on. It became a summer solstice tradition. By 1990, the gathering picked up a name, Burning Man, and grew to hundreds. This time, the cops were onto them, and nothing would be burned. A couple of months later, over a Labor Day weekend, they took that effigy to Nevada's Black Rock Desert and burnt it there. Since then, hundreds of thousands of people have descended on this chalky patch of desert, which becomes Black Rock City for just a little while each year.
I can see the entrance.
This right here is where the pavement meets the playa, where the outside world intersects with a temporary utopia.
Okay, we are turning off. Ugh, this is where it gets desolate. It's crazy that we make our way out here every year, because it really is inhospitable. And I have to pee so badly.
In the early years, you ended up at Burning Man because someone told you about it. For me, it was my roommate Larry, who'd been the year before. That first year, as we approached the entrance, I was petrified. What if I couldn't deal with the heat and dust? What if I had a bad trip? What if I just wanted to leave? Spoiler alert, I stayed. but it did feel like an alternate reality, with no obvious rules or enforcers, no phones, no electricity, and no real contact with civilization. I mean, when we were at Burning Man in 1997, we heard Lady Diana was killed and thought it was a prank. Here's the thing. Something happens when the outside world falls away and you can do whatever you want, whenever you want. You have to trust your gut. And when you find yourself in the emptiness at night under a dome of stars, you imagine what's possible. And if you keep going, bike further and further into the nothingness, you just may end up at what feels like a rave on the surface of the moon. How can that not affect you? I remember returning to San Francisco after that first year and trying to articulate what I'd experienced. Here's the best I could come up with. Imagine thousands of incredibly cynical people coming together to build a city, and for a little while, having no reason to be cynical. I returned a dozen times over the next two decades. Burning Man became an annual ritual, my personal New Year's, where I checked in, took stock of my life, and, when necessary, course corrected.
Stop! You put it in park?
I can.
Hi. Do you have any plants, animals, firearms, explosives, people stuffed back here?
No.
No. All right. Have you been in early before?
Yes, not this early, but yeah.
Cool. So work access fast first, please.
In the time that I've been attending, the event has grown from 8,000 to 80,000 people. The wooden man at the center has risen from 8 feet to over 100. And base ticket prices have soared from $35 to nearly $500. Everything has been supersized. The art got more ambitious and more intricate, the music louder and just a little more varied, the vehicles mutated from jazzed-up golf carts into multi-million-dollar, fire-spewing behemoths. At the same time, what was originally utter chaos was tamed by a grid of streets and basic infrastructure. What began as a below-the-radar happening became a cultural phenomenon worthy of an exhibition at the Smithsonian.
This is the hand you do not wipe with?
Do you ask that of everyone?
I do!
Burning Man is still a magnet for artists, ravers, and radicals. But now, it attracts moguls and models looking for a good time and a gorgeous backdrop for their Instagram feeds.
All right, 5 miles an hour on Gate Road. As soon as they're clear to go, you're free to go.
Okay.
And Media Mecca is open. All right.
Bye now.
Hold up, don't go too close. They might still need to search that vehicle.
Okay. Okay, we are in. We will be greeted soon.
Population growth came with a healthy dose of the real world. Bikes started to go missing, so we started to lock them up. Tickets became harder to come by as demand outstripped supply and scalpers got in on the action. Instead of doing whatever, wherever out here, we now had to worry about the roving police cars. And while my camp used to serve bacon and Bloody Marys to anyone who showed up, we now had to adhere to an actual health code, check IDs, and set a schedule for service. And I get it. More people means more problems like theft and sexual assault. And that means more rules.
Just little old me.
Welcome home. I love you. F*** your burn. Daft Punk at the trash fence. All those fun things. Walmart's at center camp. Amazon delivers every hour. Ice is free. You just need to wish it and drones will deliver it for you. The Wi-Fi password is big imagination, all lowercase, one word.
Fantastic.
Yep. Anything else? You've been here before?
Yeah.
Cool.
Media Mecca. What time? Is it open? Do you know?
I'm not sure. That is above my pay grade. I just stand out here without any pants and drink free beer.
You're right. You're not wearing any
pants. I'm not lying. Nope. I mean, I have a He-Man Merkin on, so.
I love a Merkin.
Who doesn't?
And the
right?
Carpets match the drapes.
They do match the drapes. You gotta keep the carpet shaved.
It's one thing for burners to gripe, but it is irritating to hear people who have never been talk about how much it's changed, how it's just an excuse for a bunch of rich white techies to have sex and do drugs. And it's understandable, since there's a lot of that in the press and on social media. Even a recent New York Times article about a Nobel-winning economist doing research at Burning Man mentioned orgies 3 times in the first 150 words. What doesn't really cut through is why mayors from around the world attend each year. Or how many green innovations and social service organizations have been born right here. Or that many of the people who bring large-scale art projects to the Playa can now actually make a year-round living as artists. But how do you tell the story of this sprawling temporary city and its inhabitants? How do you capture 400 art installations, 700 mutant vehicles, and millions of spontaneous interactions? How do you begin to chronicle the nearly 1,500 theme camps, including camps for Christians, furries, deaf burners, sober burners, kids, clowns, scientists, people of color, and the polyamorous? I mean, at any given time, you can choose from hundreds of workshops, performances, and offerings. You can get your bike repaired, your aura read, and your genitals painted. You can score freshly baked bread, vegan ramen, and poutine. You can get your pupils dilated, your bottom spanked, and procure a morning after pill. And not a penny changes hands.
It's gonna white out, so I'm gonna let you go, because okay. Then we're gonna stop you when it does.
Okay.
Welcome home.
Hi, thank you. Okay, it's official. We are in. Oh my God, this is hideous. It is dusty as f*** out here. Well, I think I'm gonna sign off for right now and deal with the whiteout. Ugh. Okay. Okay. Bye for now.
That was an excerpt from episode 1 of The Intersection at Burning Man, produced by KALW's managing editor, David Boyer. You can hear the rest of that episode and other episodes from the season at theintersection.fm. And tune into Cross Currents next week for totally new episodes. Today's Cross Currents team includes Precious Green, Marissa Ortega-Welch, B. Saul, Victor Tense, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.